Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our news and Q's episodes. We're going to talk about questions. That's what Q stands for. And then we're going to talk about some Star Wars news, which is what the word news stands for itself. It stands for itself.
We are the Sesame Street of Star Wars podcasts, brought to you by all the right letters and numbers. A lot to get to today. A lot of great questions. Before we get to all that, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles and growing to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, wherever Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And as always, we have another offer.
We do indeed. Inside Editions is a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books and other pop culture books. And as Ken said about Audible and growing. Inside Editions are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are continuing to recommend the Inside Editions book, Inner Jedi Journal. It is out now. It is a great little resource book to admire the challenges that Jedi place before themselves to be the best Jedi they can be. And you can fill out the journal and try to be your best you in 2022 as well. So if you're interested in that, you can check out this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
We do love this little book here, but I love you just made like a early 1960s like doo-wop song. This little Jedi book. You don't know what you got. Great stuff. Great stuff. InsideEditions.com/discount/FC35. I was going to smoothly come in and tag with the link again, and then I just fell down on my face.
I understand. Let me help you fit that. Yes, I see.
Leroy Jenkins myself into the ground here. Charged on ahead. My tongue wasn't ready. All right, folks, we are going to dive into news. But before we do that, actually, we love to catch up and talk about Star Wars adventures, life adventures, and all things in between. Joseph, how has it been?
It's been a very fun weekend for me, a nice weekend, but a sad weekend. My wife has been out of town visiting her family, so I have been on my own. So I've been having some nice time to watch some different things and all that kind of stuff. I had so many little ways that Star Wars popped into my life. My life adventure was almost like, remember, Star Wars is everywhere.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the Scream franchise, so I had rewatched all those films and went to see the new film. And it's amazing how many different films in the Scream franchise reference Star Wars, including Carrie Fisher being in one of the films, Timothy Oliphant, who we now know in Star Wars world as Cobb Vanth, actually taking a pot shot at the Ewoks. You can watch Cobb Vanth smack talk the Ewoks in Scream. There's a lot of, you know, pop culture references that's a big part of what the Scream franchise has already been. And there's a lot of the kind of things that you and I talk about on this podcast and all pop culture people kind of wrestle with the current state of what is new and what is old and how do they meet. And that's a big part of what's going on in the new film without spoilers. So there's that. But I think the Star Wars adventure I had that was the most interesting to me this weekend is I watched last night the movie Quadrophenia. If for people who are not caught up on Book of Boba Fett, we're going to be talking about Book of Boba Fett a lot this episode between some news things and some questions. So spoiler town, this is your fair warning that we're going to spoiler town on Book of Boba Fett. The much discussed space Vespas in chapter 3 of Book of Boba Fett were clearly a reference to Quadrophenia. I've never seen Quadrophenia, but Ken, that album was like super important to me as a kid. Yes. I don't know if you're a Who fan. I know you're a rock fan. Are you a fan of The Who?
I'm a big fan of The Who, but only have seen Quadrophenia in like parts, you know, where you're like, oh, I think I saw that during college. It was on at some point in the classroom in my class. Yes. So I haven't taken that deep dive on it.
Yeah, that's where I was at because I'm a fan of The Who. I was a fan of a ton of classic rock, but the actual album Quadrophenia, it just like hit at the exact right time when I was in like eighth grade and I didn't even understand what the plot of the musical, the song was, but the clear presentation of a young person going through angst and struggling and trying to find themselves and trying to feel empowered, but not trying not to give into their rage. All these great ideas were so clear to me. And I listened to Quadrophenia like on repeat at the exact same time that I read Stephen King's It. So they're strangely married in my mind.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I never got around to watching the film. So like, okay, when people are like, oh, these Vespas are aesthetically a clear match. There's, you know, some shots that are very similar. I went and watched the movie and really enjoyed it. Had lots of thoughts about the film itself. I thought it was a great film. But it put the Vespa stuff and the mod culture into even more context of how it relates to Book of Boba Fett. But I think the main reason I wanted to include it as my kind of Star Wars adventure is just that reminder that Star Wars pulls from so many different cultural ideas and experiences and impressions that Star Wars is just such a great gateway to discovering or experiencing things that you haven't before. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I feel like Book of Boba Fett, between suggesting you watch Quadrophenia, Jennifer Beals suggesting you watch Flashdance, I'm hoping that more important 70s, 80s music related films will be recommended by Boba Fett in this series.
Maybe Roger Daltrey will just show up as a Star Wars grizzled weirdo at the end of a series or something.
He's got some acting credits for sure. So I would love to see Roger Daltrey.
That's a great connection. I did not think of Star Wars and The Who would be popping up today, but here we are. Love that.
Yeah. It all overlaps in our big cultural stew. So, yeah, those are some of my Star Wars adventures. How about yourself?
You know, and I have a few ways to go with this. I guess it was weekend of seeing movies and stuff. I always am a little behind on the movies. I'm also I've seen one of the Screams, I think. I don't do horror movies, scary movies too much. And I wouldn't call Scream the scariest of the scariest, but I don't seek that genre out much. But I finally saw Marvel's Eternals. So not to turn this into a review of that, I thought I really enjoyed it, Joseph. I'm sorry to put that out there into the world. I don't know. Really enjoyed it. I thought it was, hear me out, folks, the most Star Wars-like MCU film for me.
Yeah.
In terms of the questions it asked and raised and made you think. It was one of the movies that I was still kind of woke up the next day and Grace and I went for our Sunday walk. We're like still thinking about it and still thinking about a lot of things. Can you get into some of the base level criticisms, the good faith ones at least, and say, okay, I could see some points. Yeah, maybe. It's not where I want to live a lot of times when I'm engaging with movies. And this one I thought was really effective and enjoyed it. Though it was weird as a Game of Thrones nut seeing first Jon Snow and Robb Stark talk. But to hear both of them say Cersei with admiration and affection was a little weird for me.
Yeah, no, my wife and I saw Eternals and did an episode of our Obsessed podcast about it. And that was one of the things of just like, speaking of the pop culture stew, it sometimes, you know, actors get really identified with a role and it's hard to see that, you know, like there's some like great movies where I'm like, I love this movie. It is a deep, complex film. But also I did watch it because Poe Dameron is married to Padme Amidala, which is weird. You kind of have to acknowledge that sometimes those are the impacts and then move beyond it. But I was definitely weirded out by that as well.
Yeah. No, it's fun. Yeah. No, it's all, it does speak to like this wonderful large pop culture world we reside in. It is kind of fun. So that aside, not to turn to a great review, though, I'll say this, everyone, director, writers, Ramin Djawadi doing the music, grab everyone, cinematographers and just move them over Star Wars. I'd be fine. I'd be totally fine because I really enjoyed what that movie was doing. So other than two quick ones, I've been doing some cleaning lately and I found a envelope in a box that had some old like podcasting gear, the early days of Force Center. Not my favorite gear we had, but I had it and I was like, what is this little envelope from Australia? And it was a listener back in about 2016 named Sarah Rossin. Sarah, hello, if you're still listening here, had sent us, you, me, and Jennifer, like a nice handwritten note and some little trinkets, little gifts for some, you know, some of our work she really appreciated back in 2016. So I had like an Admiral Raddus, like Topps trading card sealed, and she had sent me like a General Leia Lego minifig from like The Force Awakens General Leia.
Oh, nice.
And I forgot about it. And it was sealed in this like plastic tote. Yeah, my storage. And I pulled it. I was like, look at this bonus Leia. So Sarah, we said thank you back in the day, but I'm going to say thank you again. Appreciate it. Because now the Leia is on display as well as the Admiral Raddus card. So fun thing there. And speaking of gifts.
Yeah. I think that's the Star Wars lesson on multiple levels, that the past is always here and it can come back to affect us in beautiful ways as well.
In beautiful ways. Don't let the past die. Pull it out of storage. That's what I said. the other thing, the gift, I got a belated Christmas gift, I could say, but it was ordered during the time. Grace and I decided only to do like one big exchange of a gift this year. And I received finally the Star Wars Archives Paul Duncan book, the 97 to 2005 book.
Ooh.
The follow-up to his wonderful one on the original trilogy era. And he's got a Bond one out there too. They're so wonderful. These books are, but they're so big too. I just don't know if I have room. It's like a sideshow version of club books. Like, you know, I don't know. I'd love him. I love his take and the way he puts these all together. Anyways, not going with the details. I'm sure I'll reference a lot of the quotes and little morsels and gems of information in those books. But the opening one, the opening page there has like an intro from George Lucas, but it was written in 1999. It was written before The Phantom Menace comes out. And wow. It's stunning. It's stunning to see kind of what he almost knew was going to come down the pipeline in terms of backlash. Stunning to see what he was trying to accomplish and what he was really excited about in terms of digital filmmaking and CGI characters and all those kind of things. And we know that as Star Wars fans, and that's always going to be discussed, and it should. But to hear or to read here, because I probably read it out loud to myself, to see it on the page, of him just knowing going into Phantom Menace what he had done, what he was about to do. and what it, how it would be received. It was really fascinating. Just great insight into him as a creator, and, you know, controversial at times and not everything executed perfectly. Sure. But it's George, man. And this is his world. And he wanted to tell the story, felt it was time. And I love all that. Love all that stuff. So if you're all out there, if you ever get a chance to get a hold of these books, highly recommend them. Just clear off like a giant table for one of them.
Yeah, no, I desperately want both of the Star Wars ones and the new edition of the Bond one with the great aquamarine of No Time to Die. Like, oh,
yes.
The books are aesthetically beautiful as well as packed with information.
Yes, and as I said before, squeeze tofu dry if you just put them on top.
Well, I think that's the way I'm going to justify spending an insane amount of money at some point, is I'll just say, like, look, they're multi-purpose, right? They're not just a book. They're an object of art and a kitchen utensil. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure Paul Duncan, if he were to hear that, be like, you're using my books to squeeze tofu? And yes, and they're great at it.
Absolutely, literally, no metaphor whatsoever. Squeezing tofu with your book.
So that is a look at our Star Wars adventures. Now it's time for a little Star Wars news. One of those downtimes. So yes, of course, say it with us, Force Center fans. By the time this episode drops, George Lucas will be directing episode 10 of Star Wars. That information finally going to come true. No, we got this one here. So we are going to, I guess, Joseph, carefully charge head first back into some of the controversial topics, some needed, some not so needed, last week in the Star Wars discourse. But we're going to look at it from picking up the trail and kind of maybe circling back to some of the stuff here, because I think we got a rare chance to get some current comments from people in the cast, specifically to Muir Morrison and Ming-Na Wen. They were at the TCA Winter Press Tour panel and were asked about two big key issues in Star Wars. Now, I'm just going to pull the quotes. As always, you can read, get the whole full context of things. But we're going to talk about this here. On the portrayal and death of the Tuskens on the show, Morrison said their portrayal was better than it was in the films. Morrison said, then I read in the script that we were throwing dead bodies just on the fire. And I was going, oh, hang on. We got to put a bit of ceremony into this. They are the indigenous of the sands of Tatooine. And I was creating a little bit more history about their culture. And I was pulling from my own culture in a way, in terms of the ceremonies and preparing the warrior, preparing a weapon. And Boba has never experienced a real family before, and the young Tuskens and the old Tuskens and protecting their land. Ming-Na Wen added, we knew so little about the Tuskens and the show really gave them an incredible backstory. She goes on to say, I thought all those elements really enriched the Tuskens are, and setting the bodies on fire was part of Star Wars with A New Hope, whether it's the Jawas when they were attacked. There's the ceremonious desire on Tatooine to burn the bodies as opposed to letting them lie out in the open in the desert. Now, Joseph, we're going to dive in those comments. We bring these comments not up to counter anyone who was upset or had issues with the betrayals, the betrayal of the Tusken tribe and their death, or, you know, not even betrayal. We didn't really see it. And if you're still upset, we're not bringing this up to say, see, this is what they felt. This is just, I thought it was really interesting, Joseph, that I was expecting this maybe 6 months from now, but to get at least some insight into some of the actors, specifically Tim Morrison's thoughts on this, was interesting, and I thought an interesting opportunity to revisit this. So what do you take away from some of those comments? That's a big, vague, sweeping question, Joseph, but what do you go?
I'll go first to not caveats, but additional information before I get to any of my own personal thoughts. I have been happy to see that it feels like there has been a really healthy discussion and discourse about the Tuskens and their, you know, very, very similar relationship coded as indigenous and native people from the actual real world. And there's some great discussions out there happening. We retweeted on the Force Center Twitter feed a thread collecting multiple different perspectives from native and indigenous people with, like I said, some really great a variety of takes and understanding. So if you want to find that, you can go to our Twitter feed, or the person, their handle, who offered some of their opinions and collected many others. Their handle is @SatelliteTides. And that's just one of the things that I found. I think there's a lot of great discussion out here from Native and Indigenous people. And I think those are the voices that we should certainly listen to first about this discussion about the Tuskens. Other caveat for me is I think it's really great to discuss the chapter three of Book of Boba Fett and also chapter one and two and the entire history of the Tuskens. I also really want to be clear that I think we are discussing the middle of the story and we really don't know where it goes next. Which for me, what I mean by that is I think Boba Fett's journey as a crime lord, of that kind of big question of why does he want to be a crime lord? I think his motivations from an emotional standpoint are really clear of he worked for a long time as a bounty hunter where he did maybe immoral things for people who didn't have honor. Maybe he just doesn't want to be just the warrior anymore. He wants to be the leader. He clearly wants to be a leader that that shows strength through mercy and empathy and in unity and not a leader who just, you know, leads through fear and murder and lies and backstabbing and dishonor. So like how and why he wants to conduct himself as a leader on kind of like an emotional and a philosophical level, I feel like is there. But I feel like with these twin stories of the past and the present, the actual story, the plot mechanics, does he have a different motivation? Did any of the Tuskens survive? What happened next? I just want to put a really big pin in this to say we are discussing the middle of a story.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, you've been talking off air of just like we haven't even got halfway to the midway point of this book. This book of Boba Fett.
It's right. Going on. Yeah. So yeah. So I definitely want. I think it's valid and important to discuss each chapter as it comes out. That's the way it's presented. But also for me, some of my own, you know, personal, you know, opinions, evolving opinions, I want to give them an opportunity to evolve and see where the rest of the story goes. So all of that was just caveats, Ken. Now I have a very short answer to your actual question, which is I think the biggest thing that I take from this is Ming-Na Wen. It's always just so great that Ming-Na Wen is clearly such a Star Wars fan and clearly, you know, making connections and you know, approaching this as a phenomenal actor and also a phenomenal fan, in my opinion. Yeah. And then I think perhaps the most important thing is it's good to hear from Temuera Morrison himself that this story is influenced by his culture. And I don't think that should change any opinion that anybody has. But I also think that we should speak respectfully about the fact that Temuera Morrison is telling us that some of this story is influenced by his own culture.
Yeah. And I think that was my big takeaway of that there. And I think you could see even in how the scene was put together, trying to again separate the bigger conversations and discourse around it versus just what was on screen and in the story. I was, you know, and I think a lot of people were particularly moved by his performance in that moment. I love the way it was shot. And just, I think, I don't know, Joseph, if like comfort's the right word or just a little more context and clarification to what they put into that moment. It just, to know that a lot of it did come from him in the process of making this. And I know it's probably that's been made of, you know, if you look at his quote here, it might seem like, you know, I don't know. I've seen some conversation of, you know, John just said, and then they die. And then he said, whoa, hang on. You know, I think we're not there on set. We're not getting the full conversation there.
Exactly.
But I don't know. It just it did that whole sequence as painful and upsetting as it should be, right? Whether or not people wanted to see that or be reminded of that or needed to see that or felt it was fair to the characters is part of what we've been discussing here on the show, and part of what you said is so wonderfully being discussed out there. But I just think to know that it did have some great purpose to Tem and will have great purpose to Boba Fett in the Book of Boba Fett, just makes me, I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. And I don't like when people are hurt or upset or reminded of painful things in Star Wars. You come to this for different reasons and the setup of it was so well done. And that was probably where a lot of the hurt came from, right? It was so well
I think
done.
So. Yeah.
So well done. And Ming-Na Wen was talking about that. And then, yeah, so I get it. But I don't know. At the end of the day, just like, okay, cool. You know, a lot of it came from Temuera Morrison and his point of view, experiences, and understanding of his own culture's pain and suffering, too. So it made the moment that much more real for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think his performance is absolutely great. And I think it's just vital to have, you know, there's extremely understandable conversations about who is telling what story, and you know, the writers are not native or indigenous. but it, clearly, at least at some level, Tamara Morrison is having some input. So I think that's the thing for me, is I want to be careful to the way I describe my thoughts to incorporate that truth that he is saying. Some of this comes from my culture, and I want to have the utmost respect for him in his artistic contributions that come from his culture.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Well said. Well said. Joseph, that was, unless you got anything to say more about that, we've got actually something worse to discuss.
I think the last thing that I want to say on it is, I think it is very, very good to be able to have nuanced conversations and to look at things and say, there's this part of it that I enjoyed, this part of it that I find upsetting, this part of it that I question, that I don't know how I feel about yet. I think that's really healthy and really great, and as much fun as it is to you know, rank things and have strong opinions, like, we don't always need to feel 100% I'm over here on Team X. I think it's good to sometimes have things that are like, I have multiple feelings about this one thing, and some of them even conflict with one another, and let's talk, let's think, let's sit with it and see where we end up.
Yeah, and I think we're always, at least we try to be real careful on Force Center to have, number one, have those nuanced conversations, but also never use that nuance to stamp out anyone else's pain, right?
Right.
Or point of view.
Right.
Whether or not we're perfect on that, you out there will let us know. But yeah, I think that all comes to mind too as well.
Yeah, but well said.
Speaking of, complete nuanced conversation, the most controversial Star Wars thing ever, the Mos Vespa Espa gang, was brought up here. I mean, look, I'll say this, I'm not including the Tusken conversation in this entirely here, to be clear, but I do get exhausted every week that Star Wars lives or dies by something little on the screen. It's been a week, my friend. It's been a week.
Yes, it is fascinating. The Mos Vespa thing is so very, very surface.
Yeah, but with some depth to it, right there. But so they were asked about this. Let's get to the point here. And Morrison said, some of these things are out of our control. We can't say, as performers, we don't want to work with these people, and that's not good enough. They, meaning the cast, Jordan Bolger, Sophia Thatcher, and others, they brought a lot of color to it. I thought they were great. We're working hard. Ming-Na went at it. Ever the Star Wars lore expert, I would say. This is a real homage to the things George Lucas always loved, whether it was the mods in the 60s or Lucas's hot rod film American Graffiti. At the same time, it lends itself to learning more about Tatooine. And Sophie was a lovely human being. There goes Sophia. Not Sophia. Can't get it right. Sophie was a lovely human being, and I definitely enjoyed getting to know her. Yellow Jackets has been in my house all over the last week. I just haven't watched a lot of it, but she's doing great in that show too. Everyone's great in that show. All right, Joseph, dumping all that on the table. We understand this gang didn't or has not yet worked for everyone. I contend sometimes over time, things start to work for you a little bit more in Star Wars than they did upon initial viewings or the initial era in which you viewed them. What's our takeaway from these comments as a landmine, landmine field to walk over? I know, but what do you think?
Oh, okay. Well, I'll begin with my caveat of, like, I feel like the scooters, the actual space Vespas have both, I think they have some depth to what it means to the characters and to the story of Book of Boba Fett and to the community of Mos Espa that we're learning more about. But they also just have the absolute surface aesthetic. And that is a part of the power of Star Wars, is that it looks cool. And to some people, these space Vespas don't look cool. And if that is your opinion, that I don't like them, I don't enjoy them aesthetically, I have no problem with that. Asked and answered, right?
Yeah.
You know, our opinions are asked and answered. I think what it was challenging this week was not that some people were just like, I don't like those, they don't work for me, but those understandable aesthetic opinions being voiced with just so much venom at times. That's always the part that bums me out. Like, there are little things in Star Wars that, like, aesthetically, that's not for me, or I'll never be a fan of that line, but I don't ever want to express them with anger, because what do we get from that?
Evil Sith Lords. Is that the answer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about, aesthetic things, right? Like, you know, it's been fascinating this week to have the contrast between these two conversations, where one is truly about cultural representation that is a Star Wars conversation, but much larger than Star Wars. And then to me, the scooters, while they do have meaning, can be boiled down to, you know, did you like the aesthetic or not?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like, did you like the aesthetic or not is not a place where we need a ton of heightened emotion.
Yeah, look, the Space Vespas are not a hill I'm going to die on, right? And they'd be simply because I would not.
Which is, anyway, sorry. Yeah. I was thinking about something that actually happens in Quadrophenia, and it made me laugh.
As I think I even said on the review, like, and I would not say they are my favorite thing in Star Wars. But I think what we try to do here on Force Center, and what I do, the hill I do die on is looking beyond the surface. And as long as like, if I'm in a conversation, I've had a few conversations off air over lunch with a friend on Friday, people asking me going, hey, so what do what do you think about this? And when it's an exchange of ideas of, and I feel as though you've taken a little moment, I'm not saying hours of research or do a podcast, a little moment to acknowledge that the decision to put these multicolored, very clean Vespas, Space Vespas, as we keep calling them. I know they have a real name or will have a Wikipedia name that we can all enjoy later. It was not just fleeting. And it was done with some sort of purpose, and it was done with an homage to George, but also keeping in line with some of the Star Wars traditions. If you're okay with that, at the end of the day, you still go, but not my favorite thing. It didn't work for me. Not a fan of him. We're good here. You know, we're good here. And I think both these quotes, we're talking about these quotes, kind of cover all those grounds. Morrison doesn't really come out and say that something's out of our control. And it's so, you know, actors are such a key part of the creative process, as we just talked about with Tamar Morrison in that scene. But sometimes you can hear Luke Skywalker's himself, Mark Hamill, say something that seems against Last Jedi or, you know, another film. Or I've seen back in the old Game of Thrones season 8 things, a comment about Emilia Clarke saying, oh man, I didn't know what to do with this. And I actually cried the day I found out this was happening to my character. And I had to find a way as an actor to make that work. That can mean a lot of things, but if you want it to mean one thing, it will mean that thing to you. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Space Vespas, you might take this comment, but yep, I thought they were stupid, but I had to work with them. And maybe that's the case. But I think at the end of the day, Ming-Na Wen really lays on the line of like, hey, this is what was there. This is why. And you and I have discussed what we feel are the themes. And I, the hill I die on is what I feel sometimes can be a condescending, not everyone intends this way, by the way, but it can be a condescending pat on the head of shows like Force Center or commenters like you or I, Joseph, like, oh, you're so positive, but that thing was cringe.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work for me because we're not sitting here for 2 hours sucking on a lollipop going, Star Wars is great. We are digging into why it's there. Why is that there? Why was that choice made? And at the end of the search, you might not agree with the choice. And that's fine. I just want you to go on the search with me. And that's what's been exhausting the last week. And so anyways, I just loved it. I loved Ming-Na Wen's comment. Like, hey, this is why it was there.
Yeah, no, I still agree with both of you. I think, you know, for Tamar Morrison's comments, like, I would only give them any sort of, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. Not every question is for an actor, and I kind of like that he's like, you know, A, I would like to see the full context, and even in the article, I didn't see the video. It's just, you know, right. It's words on a paper, and so much is communicated by the tone. And sometimes actors get asked questions that aren't really, like it's weird to ask Tamar Morrison about the color of speeders. He's like, I wasn't in the production meeting. I don't know, I showed up on set. You know, the other thing he's talking about is his culture and the actions his character are taking. That's a question for an actor, you know?
Yeah.
Boba Fett, why did you paint those speeders? Like, I mean, I know that's not what the interviewer is asking, but yeah. So anyway, so for me, there's like, yeah, I don't need to spend any time guessing anything about that because I don't have anywhere near enough context to have an opinion.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
About Tamar Morrison's statements, and yeah, and then I agree with Ming-Na Wen. I think for me, they absolutely fall into tradition of Star Wars because they tie to all those traditions of the history of racing in Star Wars, everything from the Falcon to pod racing to Anakin and Attack of the Clones picking out a bright yellow speeder to find one he likes. You know, it's just so a tradition of Star Wars. And then for me, there's that. Do they fit in Star Wars? Yes, absolutely for me. Mm-hmm. But then also, like, what do they mean for the characters? What is, why are they there? What's the point of them? Is there is a history of storytelling and real life about angry, frustrated youth who are finding, trying to find a way to be seen, to be heard, to break the rules. And everything about those speeders fits in with that for me. And there's many moments in storytelling and in real history where people are like, I don't have a lot of money, but I, by hook or by crook, I'm going to find a way to pour my money into something that gives me identity, a way that I can express myself, a way I can scream to the elders that I'm here and I exist and I don't have to do things the way you always did. And just that, the frustrations of the youth coming of age, that is so Star Wars. It is generational storytelling. It's the new and the old. It's coming of age stories. There's just so much packed into these silly space Vespas that gets to the core of Star Wars storytelling. That chapter is called The Streets of Mos Vespa or Mos Espa. It's about the community and how they feel and all that, you know? So I just kind of feel like for the actual meaning of the scooters, it's rich in Star Wars. It's dripping Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's one of the conversations I had. Now we're just moving beyond the quotes into.
Sorry.
No. Because it. Because look, I'll be honest. You want? I try to be as honest. I was pretty pissed this last week. I was pretty pissed. You know, I just and not the Tusken conversation. That was a great conversation to dive into. I was pretty pissed about the Space Vespa discourse, right? Because it finds its way to you, no matter what you mute. It finds its way to you. part of it, like some of the good faith conversations, to be blunt, was like, well, it just, they were so clean and looked so different. They didn't look like they belonged on Tatooine. And I'm like, my point exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is the point, is that they live in a gray beige world where everything is, you know, a little bit run down, and they are working hard to make those speeders look like that. They're a loud declaration. They're a statement.
I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, even colorized film footage of, England, London during the, 60s, 70s. Pretty drab and gray and monotone. And there come the mods. There come the punk rockers. There come the hair. And the conversation about what is Star Wars. I there's been spotlight Star Wars episodes. There's, you and I have talked about it. It is an interesting thing to dive into. Hey, what is Star Wars? What looks good? The N1 Naboo Starfighters initially, is that Star Wars? Yeah, that's definitely Star Wars. So I'm there for that conversation. If you're having just a, not even like a good faith conversation about it, but like a wondrous, what makes things work in Star Wars and line up with the aesthetic or the creature design, the character design? Why do I catnap suck, see Infest Nest and go, holy poop, that is Star Wars. Why do I see another character and go, I'm not, you know, Eamon, Dryden Voss's guy, Eamon. I look at that and go, I don't, is that Star Wars? Yeah, it is. Okay. At the end of the day, it is. But so I'm saying, Joe, my caveat, oh man, I got myself worked up today. I'm being a little snotty here. The question of whether or not you look at a frame on a show and go, is there Star Wars in that shot or not? The answer is it Star Wars? Then it's Star Wars. Are you watching a Star Wars show? Then everything you see on the screen is Star Wars.
Yeah, I think maybe that's like a really great way to discuss it, is Star Wars is this vast canvas and the palette is ever increasing in terms of the aesthetic. Like, put the meaning aside entirely, which maybe we shouldn't separate the aesthetic and the meaning, but I'm going to for the sake of this. Maybe I'm making a horrible mistake. But if you're looking at it just from a point of aesthetic, yeah, the palette is always going to expand. And I think it's totally fine to go, that works for me, that doesn't. Anybody who's listening who's just like, aesthetically, they don't work for me, they take me out of the show, like, I totally understand. I think that's one of the great Star Wars conversations, of so much in Star Wars is inspired by the real world, but often what we love is it is so fantastic and bizarre, and you can't encounter that in the real world, and yet it is somehow connected to the real world, right? Like, yeah. Chadra fans. Cabe, they're cute little bat people. connected to bats, but you're not going to see a Chadra fan walking around, you know? And I think that's always been this tension of Star Wars, is when is it too real world that it takes you out of the fantasy? That was what a lot of people's problem with Dexter's Diner. It wasn't fantasy anymore. You were just in a 50s diner. We have talked about that a lot. And I would understand somebody who goes like, hey, yeah, no, I Googled Quadrophenia. I watched Quadrophenia. And those Vespas aren't Star Wars. They aren't space fantasy changes enough. It feels too one-to-one. I don't like it aesthetically. Like, that's something that I really, really understand that perspective. But I also feel like that's been a part of the discussion of Star Wars for an extremely long time is, you know, what looks Star Wars, I think, is a lot of times that tension between how much is it inspired by the real world, but then brought into some sort of fantasy context where you space fantasy context where you feel like you're visiting an entirely different, thrilling world.
Yeah. And again, yeah. And there's going to, you know, when you're coming down to ranking things, you're going to have things that are your more favorite designs than other things. This I get. Yeah. It just was, I think a lot of us got exhausted. I think for whatever reason, the space Vespas was the one that started to push people over the edge of I'm out of here, which is disappointing. It shouldn't be that way, especially when there's a valuable conversation going on at the same time.
I personally love the space Vespas, but also the episode just explicitly spends more time with the gang focusing on their droid parts, their choice to make these alterations to their bodies, their pride in it versus the just sneering judgment of Lorth Appeal, the Watermonger. Like the episode is spending much more time on that idea.
Yeah.
than the scooters, you know. So there's also like there's this interesting thing literally riding the scooters to discuss, you know.
Yeah. Again, there's some, you know, yeah, I don't know, we can discuss the Book of Boba Fett. It goes in some places, but the reason I brought this all up again was not to dive headlong into these controversies. It was just really interesting to get the two stars of the show get a chance to address in some way the things that were going on the week it was going on, and we just thought we wanted to revisit that there. So at the end of the day, you like the Vespas or you didn't, and or you're somewhere in between where I might be too. I'm definitely going to get one. Like I'll display one, might even ride one, but yeah.
I like them. I like the idea behind them. And Ken, this is the last thing that I'll say about it. I know you're trying to wrap up and I apologize, but I'm really affected by this larger conversation that I think would be interesting to kind of keep an eye on, which is that there are always aesthetic things up and down that people aren't sure about, but bright colors have somehow, I think, for a large swath of our culture been, maybe it's Power Rangers for people of a certain age, have been sort of codified as bright colors trigger strong reactions. This happened. I went and spent some time with this. This happened in Doctor Who about 10 years ago, where there was a new Dalek regime called the New Dalek Paradigm. It's very similar because it was Daleks in bright colors, not the steely gray that you would expect, but really bright, loud, bright, poppy colors. And there was huge backlash, yeah. Massive backlash. This has gone on with superhero costumes over the years, right? Of like,
oh yeah,
we like the fantasy of superheroes. We like people who fly or dress up like animals and shoot lasers from their eyes, but we need their costumes to not be too bright because somehow that has an impact. The costumes get too bright, then it's silly. Like I'm not declaring any judgment. I just think I'm observing that this is a thing that is clearly going on in our culture, clearly going on in fandom, that bright colors are a danger. And I'm really curious to watch how it continues to play out and see different thoughts on why it's such a visceral reaction to bright colors.
Well, we're also learning this week, how dare Batgirl not be all dressed in black leather and menacing. Yeah, it's out there. It's out there.
It was a big week for bright color discourse.
I think I think the reaction to colors, and I have and this is not a comment on any particular show or movie, but people's reactions to finales and the closing of narratives is a weird thing that I'd love someone smarter than me to just study psychologically. Letting go or getting to the end of the journey.
Yeah, I think there's a lot going on with that. Thank you for letting me throw that out there, because it's just been rattling around my brain of like, it's the new Dalek paradigm all over again.
There you go. Yeah, look, yeah. I think, again, pulling back the curtain, Joseph and I here and Jennifer before us and hopefully again in the future. Like, I mean, we want to really ride that line of having strong opinions, but making sure that it's known their opinion. So that's part of the dance we're trying to always do here at this Star Wars discussion table. So hopefully we can strike a chord, a perfect chord, or near perfect chord with all of you out there. But
yeah,
you'll let us know if we don't.
And I think in that spirit, we've both said it multiple times, but maybe we can just close out this by saying it again. If anybody's listening and they don't like the speeders, that's totally fine, right? We all have a right to have a different opinion about elements of Star Wars.
I'm still going to give you a big hug at Star Wars Celebration. Final story. Oh, we're trying to move away from controversy, Joseph, but two names that cause a lot of discussions, George Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy. Hey, they will be honored with the 2022 Milestone Award at the 33rd Annual Producers Guild Awards. This was announced on Friday. They will be recognized for their contribution to both film individually and collaboratively through Lucasfilm. The 33rd Annual Producers Guild Awards will take place on March 19th down in Century Plaza in Los Angeles at the Fairmont Century Plaza. Reading here from the Hollywood Reporter, this is a prestigious honor, Joseph, a big one. And the fact that they will be receiving it at the same time, man, I can't wait for these YouTube videos. What do you think?
I think it's absolutely great that they're being honored. I love that they're being honored together because they have these individual accomplishments and careers that are amazing, but also their careers and their accomplishments are intertwined. I love in their statements, both Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy kind of celebrate, like, it's a great honor to get this. It's an even greater honor to get it with, you know, friends and my friend and fellow producer, right?
Yeah. 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 Look, we're joking a lot, but obviously it's going to be, it's just interesting. It's just interesting. And as we're celebrating 50 years of Lucasfilm still, that still kind of blows my mind. 50 years. Half a century of this company that's changed so many lives, right? Just whether you worked on Star Wars or Indiana Jones or anything else, or just ILM or anything, it's just all of it's amazing. And then for Kathleen Kennedy to come along and be part of so many stories that shape so many childhoods and entertain so many childhoods and continue to do that, and adulthoods, though I'm still feeling like I'm a child. So yeah. Love that. Yeah, and here, and to look, I was watching, I had the Under the Helmet Boba Fett special on this morning. And again, it's not lost on me that George sat there on a patio on a porch talking about Star Wars currently. Like, this was new footage. I love that he's still around. I love that it's in his blood. And it means a lot to me as a fan to see him and Kathleen Kennedy getting this together.
Yeah, all those fresh interviews with Lucas and Ben Bird. I know that there's some excitement that the possibility that those interviews weren't just for this, 20-ish minute Boba Fett retrospective, but even more thoughts. Final thing for me on this is, like, I think sometimes the discussion of Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy can focus just on very specific, you know, creative choices. And certainly producers weigh in massively on the creative. Lucas himself, obviously, writing and directing. That's pretty creative. But it's also just a cool to see them rewarded as producers in being reminded of everything that entails, that it isn't just some of the kind of creative back and forth that we sometimes have as fans. I like this particular quote from Lucas talking about it being an honor, this statement he released talking about what a producer really is. He says, protecting creativity while balancing business, moving technology forward to make real what you can see into your mind's eye, and doing it all from scratch most of the time. That's a great little way to encapsulate the way Lucas looks at what the job of a producer is, and certainly a producer of big blockbuster films like Star Wars. And I think it's just great to take a step back and remember producer is its own thing.
Absolutely is its own thing. That title can get thrown around a lot these days, but these two are absolutely producers, true and true and through and through. All right. That is a look at Star Wars news for now. For now, there's always other things going to pop up, and we'll get to them when we can next week's show. But before we get to get to questions and a quick break, we are going to look at our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
We are recommending the next big High Republic story. It is The Fallen Star by Claudia Gray. We will be discussing it soon on one of our deep dive episodes, so you can dive deep with the audiobook if you want.
Download that audiobook or another choice by going to audibletrial.com/4center today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. On the other side, your questions here on 4center.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to 4center. We've taken a look at those news. Now it's the cues. Joseph, what do we get? We
got two questions from Twitter and two questions from our patrons on Patreon. We're going to go to Twitter first, where we have some Book of Boba Fett questions, which makes perfect sense, given that is the Star Wars that is blazing across our screens right now. We go to Michael Gibbons. Michael says, in our favorite galaxy far, far away, every vision we have seen has been connected to the Force. Perhaps, that is, until Chapter 2 of the Book of Boba Fett. Do you think all visions are guided by the Force? It connects us all. Or does a lizard in one's brain simply act as a psychedelic? It's a really fun question about the vision, the guided experience that Boba Fett goes on to retrieve the branch and I think, push through his fear. Where do you go with this, Ken? Do you think that... How do you interpret the lizard? How do you want to think about that lizard?
Other than it is truly one of the most wonderfully bizarre things in Star Wars ever, right? You just think about that moment. Yeah, so many things there. I love it. And as far as the lizard, I think it's I don't know. This gets into big questions about your own takes on God, the universe, religion, whatever you want to break it down. Do the very rocks cry out and praise a God if we don't? All those kind of big kind of concepts there. And the way I sometimes look at the Force is that, yes, the Force has got its hands in everything, and you can make the choices from there. But there's also just something so pure about what the Tuskens are doing here and what they're offering to Boba Fett, the journey for him to take and his right to take it there within their tribe. I I personally don't think the Force is too much in that one. I think it's all Tuskens and all Lizard.
Yeah, I really like that there's a ambiguity. This is the kind of thing where I like to, like, I don't want to, you know, I'm not going, where's the Book of Boba Fett visual dictionary that tells me whether or not that lizard was connected to the Force? Like, this is the kind of detail that I like open for speculation and discussion like this, you know? Yeah. Because there's a part of me, because I'm really torn. I don't have a strong opinion. I like the idea that, yeah, no, the Force is everywhere. So if you had a deep spiritual experience, yes, perhaps you were touching the Force in some way, since the Force is created by us. It's tapping into, you know, the larger galaxy. Everything and everyone is connected through the Force. So on one hand, it makes perfect sense to me that if you have this kind of experience, you are in some way communing with the Force.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, I also think drugs are real. I think, you know, when Obi-Wan gets a little tipsy at the bar, I don't think that's the Force. I think it's the alcohol, you know?
I don't know.
that's a kind of a slippery slope if you get into this. Like, yes, three Jamesons and I will experience the Force. Like, will you? Or, you know, like, brain chemicals still exist in Star Wars, in my opinion. Yeah, but I think this is what's so great about it is it is clearly a spiritual journey that Boba Fett is going on, and that it's clearly a tradition of the Tusken people. And I think the fact that it is a spiritual journey, it is what is more important to me than how is it achieved, right?
Yeah.
Because I think it's perfectly interesting to me that is a Force sensitive lizard that causes a temporary vergence in the Force. Like, you know, the tree cave on Dagobah and the mirror cave on Octo are physically locked to those locations, but they are vergences that seem to reach into people's minds and find what fears or anxieties or hopes are there and sort of prey on them to test you. Right.
Yeah.
So the idea that the lizard is super connected to the Force and just sits on your brain and like, you know, I'm a Dagobah cave that you can take with you. Like, I'm a portable Dagobah cave. That's fascinating and interesting to me. But I also like that it is just of the sands of Tatooine, you know, and it, you know, it's, you know, lizard secretions have an impact on the chemicals of Boba's brain, or, you know, just literally like it maybe just like crawls into Bean's brains and like, oh, physically, where are your fear centers? I'm going to sit on your actual physical brain and I'm going to put my little lizard butt on your fear center. You know, I think those are both like in terms of like the how they're both compelling to me. They're both interesting, maybe a little bit of both, you know, but I feel like ultimately what matters the most is this tradition of that lizard creates, you know, it's described as a guide by the leader, by the chieftain, right?
Right, right.
So it's clearly however it's doing it, it is clearly a means to by which an individual is faced with their fears to see if they can overcome them.
Yeah, for some reason this makes me think of hyperspace. And hyperspace, such a technical thing, scientific thing in Star Wars, right? I mean, that's how I grew up with it there. But also, you know, you got to put in the coordinates, everything. But then along come those little space whales that I didn't necessarily love. Talking about what is Star Wars, I don't know. But when you dig into it, and these organic creatures with this ability to do something that I've just thought as a technical achievement for so long, and to see them connected, and to see Star Wars kind of presenting this the spiritual side to the science side too as well, it's something that draws me in it as a fan. So there's something about like what you're saying of just does the Force have these little lizard friends that like you said put their little lizard butt on your fear button in your brain. I love that idea, and I love that there is no clear answer. I'm with you on that too, and this is a great question, Michael. Scott is thinking a lot, and it's just one you want to contemplate, and maybe again wherever your heart leads you might be what the answer is.
And great conversations about the interaction with the physical world. That stick is real. It came from somewhere, you know. There's that to explore as well. And I love you connecting it to hyperspace, because there's a lot of great stuff in the High Republic where they're still figuring things out about hyperspace, and they have, you know, scientifically sort of, you know, documented certain things, but there's still that like, okay, we're getting to figure out how it works. There's still debate about what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's clearly a different reality from ours, but is it a mirror to our reality? Is it a part of the Force? Like, I love that that's open for the characters to try to understand as well.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
All right, we're going to move on to our next Book of Boba Fett question from Twitter. This user's name is SmackDab. SmackDab says, clearly the monikers Sand People and Tusken Raiders were labels placed upon those natives of Tatooine by offworlders. What do you think their true name is for themselves, and do you think we will learn that information by the end of the Book of Boba Fett? I will say that this, of course, this question came in before Chapter 3, and we'll see where the story goes. But where do you go with these thoughts, Ken?
This is a great question, SmackDab. I love this one here. And, you know, as someone who is part of that generation that grew up saying Sand People with no thought to anything else, it was pretty much what, you know, you'd get on a toy box. And then I was became one of those people that was like, no, call them Tusken Raiders, not Sand People, you know. And then now I think I'll refer to them as Tuskens of the Dune Sea, or the Raiders doesn't even seem fair or correct. So I think we're seeing part of what this show has done, and even go to the Mandalorian has done, it's just really forced us to look deeper into these creatures out there in the desert. That's how we looked at them for so long, is what I'm saying. So out of that, I would both want to know if there's a word in their language they actually refer to themselves, or is Tusken it? Or at the same time, hear me out here. I don't know if I have the right to know it. And I think the Tuskens can keep it to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's my main takeaway, is that I assume that what we call the Tuskens have a name for themselves that is in their language. And, you know, can it be shared? Do they choose to share it? We're told very clearly in Book of Boba Fett that there are different groups who are connected but have different philosophies, even within the Tuskens. So it might even be, up to the different groups. But since they do seem to have their own language that is, you know, that they find ways to communicate with those who speak basic hand language and body language and some amount of translation. But I think that there's a possibility that it's not a literal, one to one. Here's our name. Here's how to translate it into basic.
Yeah.
I do feel like I like what the show has done, that Boba Fett, who is clearly trying to have the utmost respect, is saying Tuskens. So for me, that makes me think that maybe did the name Tusken come from, years and years and years, centuries ago on Tatooine, however long offworlders have been there, is that the offworlders' best, translation in basic of their actual name? I feel like for the purposes of the story, with this great question, is just saying Tuskens seems to be what is available to offworlders like Boba Fett to be respectful, whereas Sand People and Raiders. Raiders is clearly disrespectful, right? Raiders is at least in the story that we've seen, that clearly that idea of like, we came to their planet and then they raided us, like, which way does it go, and Sand People, probably. I think we're all clear on that.
Yeah. Even the point where you watch Luke, A New Hope, and you're like, Luke, come on, Luke.
Right.
Or even Obi-Wan. Come on, Kenobi.
So it's a great evolving story and a fascinating question. Any other thoughts on that one, Ken?
No, other than I absolutely love that. Grace, during our last viewing of Book of Boba Fett at the beginning of the episode, she said, do you think we'll ever get to see what their faces look like? And I don't want to see it kind of thought in my head. Maybe some people do, Jawas, I don't know, maybe be fun, but I the Tuskens themselves, I'm good not knowing, because they don't really show it to even themselves if you read into their culture.
Yeah, no, I think I'm on the same page. And that just reminded me, my wife left to go out of town before she could see this chapter, so I get to watch it again with her this evening.
Oh, there you go.
Very excited. Very excited. Thanks for the great question. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. This one comes from Maptastic. Maptastic says, greetings, Ken, Joseph, and Jennifer. I'm coming up on my 1-year anniversary of listening to Force Center, and I'm grateful for the thoughtful conversations about Star Wars you share each week. Thank you. That's very kind. Listening to you 3 to 4 times per week over the last year, I've realized that there are many moments in these shows and movies I've been watching for the past 25 years that I've fundamentally misunderstood. I'm not talking thematically, rather what's actually taking place on screen. The most shocking example is when Luke enters Jabba's palace in Return of the Jedi and is confronted by the Gamorrean guards. Since I first saw that scene in 1996, I've always thought he used the Force to put them to sleep and that they were pulling invisible blankets up to their chins to get snug for their nap. I thought it seemed a little silly, but Luke is a Jedi, so putting them to sleep seems like a very kind light side thing to do. Only upon listening to you all did I learn Luke basically force choked them. It makes way more sense when I watch it now, but also totally changes how I see Luke in the rest of the film. Do you have any similar moments or scenes where you long misread what was happening? In what ways, if any, did it change how you understood a character, the plot, or larger Star Wars themes once you learned what was actually going on? Thanks for the great podcast. May the Force be with you. Thank you for the great insights and story and kind word, Maptastic. Let's dive into this, Ken. What else have you... what have you misseen or misinterpreted in Star Wars?
I got to be honest. This is a wonderful question, wonderful story. Other than stuff early on, I think it's more about mishearing versus the just image of Gamorreans pulling up blankets to go to sleep is just amazing to me. I want to see that now.
We have hope in Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, we do. Put those blankets on those shirtless Gamorreans. Yeah. No, I got to be honest. Like, I don't have a specific example. I got everything. Thematically, I'm way off on a lot of things growing up. I really want to discuss like the depth of the Vader and the infamous no scene in Revenge of the Sith is one I just absolutely fought against for years. You could put the meaning in front of me, the thematic meaning, and I was like literally actively trying to destroy that in my brain as late as like 2011 and 12. So that once I picked up on what was really going on that scene, it changed a lot of my views on Star Wars and how I engage with it. But other than just missing a lot of scenes or as a kid or just thinking, that X-Wing definitely crashed into the Death Star shield, which it didn't, and Return of the Jedi, those kind of things. I don't have a wonderful example like a Gamorrean blankie.
I think my example is one that I have seen other people discussing on social media. And I don't know if we've ever talked about this, Ken, but it was a long time in Return of the Jedi before I realized that when Luke is on the bridge with Vader, that he's exiting the AT-AT that was pulling up.
Oh, yeah.
Was that always like obvious to you of like, oh, the AT-AT pulls up and then, oh, I see it's pulling up to that bridge and then Luke was inside it.
Yeah, because I was obsessed. I think I've discussed this on an older episode too, but like I was obsessed with the inside of AT-AT. So that was like my one like, oh God, what's in there? Is there a sofa, like a break room? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. And I think this is maybe what Maptastic is experiencing, that if you come to Star Wars, you know, whichever version of Star Wars, whichever trilogy or television show, and you watch it a lot as a kid, you can kind of get locked into things that you see, right? Yeah. And for whatever reason, when I was very young, I thought that was awesome to see an AT-AT, an AT-AT, not on Hoth. They use them places. This is like lots of other shots in Star Wars where there's just sort of like aesthetic world-building things in the background. And then Luke stepped off an elevator. And that thought got into my mind when I was incredibly young, and then I just didn't challenge it. And I think that is a part of, can be our journey with Star Wars, of we lock into something when we're very, very young and then we don't question it.
There was one, I totally forgot, I used to say this to make fun of myself, when I was very, 7, 8, when I saw Return of the Jedi, that range, I took 3PO's words at face value when he said, when R2 plays the message of Luke to Jabba, and he offers the gift of these two droids, and 3PO gets really upset and says, you're playing the wrong message. I was convinced R2 had played the wrong message for a little bit. And so maybe got turned 9.
I would love to see like an actual wrong message, like a blooper take that Luke did, or R2 starts playing some of the Calrissian Chronicles.
I guess that would, because, you know, Luke's plan has always been, you know, you did a wonderful Star Wars counseling about it, but what is Luke's actual plan and all that kind of stuff is a fun Star Wars discussion. But I think as that year as a child, I thought Luke really messed up. He accidentally gave the droids away.
Yeah, I love that. I think my other thing is droid related, and it isn't any specific, I misunderstood that, but rather I always liked the droids. But I was so focused, especially on the original trilogy, of all the other characters. And I realized after a while there, you know, I'd be watching the original trilogy, and every time I'd rewatch it, I'd be just trying to see something in the background that I maybe didn't see before, or I hadn't seen in the past, because I grew up with the pan and scan VHS things, and there were some things I literally didn't see for years. But in recent times, I've really enjoyed watching the original trilogy, and just wherever 3PO is, in particular in the frame, to not treat 3PO the way a lot of the heroes do, of like, yeah. But watch 3PO. And I saw so many fun things when I just didn't take my eyes off 3PO, because they're happening. I've literally seen them, you know, dozens, hundreds of times probably, but I've just always looked at what's in the foreground and I've never watched 3PO. And like, I was delighted to say, I didn't realize that 3PO really wipes at his thigh in the garage scene in A New Hope, because I was always watching Luke. And there's always a thigh wipes that you can discover in Star Wars, is what I'm saying.
I am going to add that on the list of things to do today. I've never really paid attention. I've ignored 3PO like all the heroes.
Exactly. So there's a little bit of a justice for 3PO. Thank you for that. A great story and observation. We're going to go to our final question from Jay Winkworth. Jay says, I've found myself in recent years scratching my head sometimes at Star Wars merchandising. Book of Boba Fett is out soon. I will pause to say we often do get these questions early and takes a while to get to them. So Book of Boba Fett is clearly out now. Anyway, Jay continues, Book of Boba Fett is out soon, yet we won't have a Black Series figure of the main character till May, June 2022. There's almost no merchandise for Luke from The Mandalorian, although I do have a sick Hot Toys pre-order coming December 2022. Even some of the deluxe lightsabers from Rise of Skywalker aren't due till middle of next year. Omega being left out of Bad Batch sets. I can go on and on. I realize these are first world problems and at best a very minor annoyance inconvenience. I just think merchandise should enhance the fan experience, not take away from it, which is what I find Star Wars does more often than not. Do you have any insight as to why this is? Is it due to the general secrecy of Star Wars projects, which delays production, or just something else? Signed, an excited little boy who got the Star Wars Early Bird special piece of cardboard one Christmas in 1977. This is great, Jay. Some toy venting. Ken, where do you go with this? Do you feel a frustration that the toys aren't in sync with what's on your screen?
To a point, yeah. Look, at, hey, first world problems indeed, but our problems are our problems, right? And this might be something that's vexing. Yeah, no. Look, as a collector, or at least someone who just loves to turn the aisle and see Star Wars toys, whether I get them or not, you know, that's part of half the reason I make the swing through it. I'm not going to buy it. I just want to know they're there. It's one of the things that's changed a lot going back to, well, I guess what would you say post Last Jedi, Joseph, where we just noticed it's changed dramatically.
Yeah. I mean, I think the toy industry has been a lot of changes, but that big shift in Star Wars of not having a basic 3¾ line, but just having some Rise of Skywalker figures within the vintage 3¾, and, you know, a big shift towards, I think, the toys still trying to be there for kids, but a big shift towards its collectors, right?
Yeah, and I think at the end of that might be why it's like that. And you know, when we have Mike Black on the show, it's been a while, but he also has great insight into some of the stuff that's actually going on. He's such a toy guy, a collector. But you and I have been around the block a little bit too, and we've just seen it change and everything. And I'm with you, Jay, on it. I know it can't be, and I don't necessarily know if I want it to be like Phantom Menace, where that's where I go to get spoiled is my Phantom Menace toys. But it is fun. It's because it is the reason we love these toys, and I've always loved them, is an extension of our love. And we want to take them home and display them and connect with them. That's the only way we really can. Unfortunately, Infant's Nest isn't real. I don't get to hang out with her here. The figures, the closest I get to saying, hey, this is a character I love, and it's displayed here in my house. So, but the only thing I say in trying to maybe turn these lemons into lemonade is now when something is released and we get, they're doing this figure and it's something we've been waiting for 2-3 years, the anticipation pays off quite well. And I get even more excited than I would if they had come out the day of the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I really agree with the spirit of this. I think some of it is, everything changes, everything evolves, and some of it is just, hey, the world has changed, the world has evolved, the toy market has changed. There's some things that I just need to accept, and other things like, I don't think that's great, and I would love to see that change.
Yeah.
But I think the spirit that I'm attaching to this is there is a thrill of, I want to celebrate what I'm enjoying, right? And I've talked about in our Book of Boba Fett reports, like, I like turning my Boba Fett figures around and having them watch the show with me.
Yeah.
And I have pre-ordered the vintage 3¾ Boba Fett from the show and Fennec Shand. And yeah, there is a real, there's a weird disconnect of like, I'm excited they're coming eventually. It'll be a great surprise, as you're saying, from your great Lemonade perspective, when they show up. But there is a part of me that's like, yeah, I want that kind of one-to-one relationship. If I saw that on my screen, I'm excited about it. I can now express my excitement. I can, you know, I love, as you're describing, action figures, toys as like a symbol of the idea they represent. And I'm so enjoying this show and some of these ideas. And that's what I want. I want to, you know, follow that instinct as Jay is describing. And it is just a really different world that I can follow that instinct by pre-ordering and waiting a long time. And I've honestly thought about, like, I wish I had the, you know, this Boba Fett and this Fennec Shand to watch the show with me on my coffee table.
Just hanging out with friends.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's just this, like, I saw that, I like that, I want to express my love through capitalism, through collecting, right? You know?
Cast your dollar vote, Joseph. That's what you're doing.
I am casting my dollar vote. And yeah, I think I am not an expert on the toy industry, but I think also to kind of answer Jay's question or try to about, you know, why the figures aren't coming out with the media or right after the specific media, I think that some of it is secrecy, right? And that stuff is pretty straightforward, right? Like the fact that there wasn't Baby Yoda, as he was known at the time, merch everywhere. And then by the time it came out, it was all labeled the child. And by the time that child came out, it was like, it's Grogu. You know, that's clearly about secrecy. We know that because we were, you know, told that. I think Luke and Mandalorian were just getting some of the, you know, the hot toys and the Funko Pops now. That was clearly about secrecy, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a possibility that some delay stuff right now might be in supply chain issues. You know, I know that there are many supply chain issues in the world. I have not done a deep dive to figure out is like, can I only pre-order Fennec Shand because of supply chain? And then I think some of the choices I think are clearly financial, that, you know, armored characters that can be repainted, they're gonna come out more, right?
Yes, yes.
Incinerator Trooper is an easy trooper to make. Yeah. You know, that kind of things. Popular characters are gonna be reissued. And then I think the thing that I think might change, could change, I'm hopeful would change is, you know, what characters do we think are going to move? You know, what characters do we think are going to sell? There's clearly a concern, in my opinion, that Rise of Skywalker is not going to move stuff, right?
Right.
Because even some of like the cool looking characters, like we still don't have a vintage 3¾ of Kylo with his cracked helmet. You know, that there's, to me, that's I don't know if that's prioritizing other things or a concern that Rise of Skywalker doesn't sell, but I think there is some of that concern about which characters are going to move the needle and sell. And I don't know exactly what to be done about that other than petitions.
Yeah.
Letting people know that you love it. But I think to end my thoughts on a positive note, I do think it is just, it's been so great to see the level of support from the toy industry on Mandalorian and on, even though it's all mostly pre-orders now for Book of Boba Fett, it's really great to see that. And it makes me hopeful that support for the Disney Plus shows will continue.
Look, at some point, Joseph, are you excited? You're going to get yourself a brand new Kenobi. It's going to happen. It's one way or another. You're going to pre-order or not, or go to a store and grab it. You're going to get a Kenobi.
In about August of 2023. Maybe December, maybe January of 2024. But you're so right. It's so funny that you said about the surprise, because one of my Star Wars adventures that I didn't list at the top of our podcast is I pre-ordered him a long time ago. He finally arrived. I just opened the box and discovered a Queel. Queel finally came to my home after waiting all this time, and it was beautiful.
This is the way I have...
Yes. Exactly. So those are our questions, Ken.
Love it. Love it. Great stuff. Oh, my gosh. A lot of fun. A lot of thought-provoking stuff. And then just venting about toys. It's like we're Star Wars fans. I absolutely love it. If you wanted to find us on Twitter, we're at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. We have a show currently going on the companion for sci-fi app called Databank Dive, exclusive to them there. We'll tweet out the links and you can join and listen if you'd like. Merch, as I said, patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us. Or if you want to go back and get some merch, go to tpublic. You can follow me at Catnapsock. Go to my website, catnapsock.com, for more. On there, I have a link to charities that I've either supported in the past or recommended by listeners. So if you'd like to plug into something and make a difference in the world, check that tab on my website. Joseph.
Yeah, the thing that I would like to support, call out attention to, is there has been some discussion around Book of Boba Fett as well, that these the discussion of the Tusken Raiders and their storyline could also do some perhaps good by making people more aware of ways to support Native and Indigenous peoples in the real world. There is a organization that I follow called Illuminative, and this is their description of what they do. Created and led by Native people, Illuminative is a new nonprofit initiative designed to increase the visibility of and challenge the negative narrative about Native nations and peoples in American society. That's what they say. On a practical level, a few of their projects include creating opportunities for Native creators in TV and film, ending the use of Native culture as mascots, and a lot of other Native storytelling projects, and a bunch more stuff. If you are interested in finding out more or supporting them, you can go to their website at illuminatives.org in general. And if you want to give them money, illuminatives.org/donate. So that's what I'm supporting this week. And for myself, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com.
Wonderful stuff. Wonderful choice. Great conversations. I apologize if I got a little grumpy earlier today. It's just been one of those weeks. But man, you know what? It all washes away when new Star Wars comes your way and you get to sit back and enjoy it all and then discuss it later. So for Joseph, for Boba Fett and all the colorful Vespa riders in space, we'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.